Far from being a black and white issue, living with integrity on a daily basis can be a real challenge. Today, we will hear from members of our own congregation, their personal stories about wrestling with integrity, as they have struggled to realize their own dreams for living. Our first presenter is Tiffany Lewis. Local activist, organizer, and elected official, Tiffany is a fighter for justice and peace. The title of her story is The Honest Politician.
First service laughed at that too. Maybe there's something there. Well, first of all, I just want to say this is my first second service. I have a little one, so it's interesting seeing a bunch of grown-ups on the blue carpet that I had to take pictures of. So hopefully it'll show up all over social media and there, so never forget. You're a crook. You're a cheater. You're a liar. I am a politician. I don't hold any big or fancy titles, but I serve our community in many different ways. I've gone through many elections, but the hardest was almost exactly a year ago. That election was quite difficult for me. People said horrible things about me, all of those things that I just said out loud to you, things that were upsetting and things that frankly made me very angry. Running for office is hard. It's intimidating. It was something that I never planned to do. I'm not really a politician, or I never thought that I was. I'm just a person who sees the need for change and was tired of those that we elected not listening. There were 14 spots open for this position that I was running for. And since so many of us were running, we would form teams, or what's referred to as slates. Campaigning, we had to go to all these events, market ourselves to rooms full of people like this, and seem like we knew what we were talking about and that we were relatable. And all in 90 seconds, right? 4 minutes here, just letting you know. Okay, what a challenge, well-trained. There's a challenge, right? But really, honestly, the hardest thing was not the 90 seconds, but it was that I had to actively try to convince people that I was better than someone else. That's mean. Or at least I felt like it was mean. I knew some of these people that were running against me and my team. They were good people. People who worked hard and cared about our community. People who were worth electing. Now, it certainly is possible, believe it or not, to run a campaign based on your own merits, and you don't have to say anything bad about the others. So that's what I did. Unfortunately, that's not what the others running against me had in mind. I was called a cheater. They said that I was being paid. Where's the check? They said that I was a liar, a crook, no good, and a whole list of other things. These were people that I knew, some of them. They were my friends. I was hurt, I was confused, and I was very angry. Sometimes I wanted to say the mean things back, and probably worse, but I would remember a story of the Buddha, a story that would give me strength. The Buddha was talking to his disciples one day when a man came and spat in his face. He wiped it off, and then he asked the man, "What next? What do you want to say next?" The man was puzzled because he had never expected that when you spit in someone's face, he should ask, "What next?" He had no such experience in the past. He had insulted many people, and they'd become angry, or if they were cowards, they would just smile. But Buddha was like neither. He was not angry nor in any way cowardly, but just matter-of-factly asked, "What next?" But the Buddha's disciples became very angry, and they reacted. His closest disciple said, "This is too much. We cannot tolerate it. If we allow this, everyone will start doing things like this." The Buddha said, "You keep silent. He has not offended me, but you are offending me. He is new, a stranger. He must have heard from people something about me, that I am a dangerous man or a corrupter. And he may have formed some idea of me, a notion of me. He had not spit on me, but he has spit on a notion. He has spit on his idea of me because he does not know me at all. So how could he spit on me? Thinking of this story of the Buddha, how could one be angry with these people that were saying these things about me? I knew that I couldn't participate in the negativity. I knew that I couldn't speak bad about the people when I knew some of these people were actually very good. I don't know what their reason was to say those things, but I know that doing what is right, what integrity is doing what is right even when it's hard, even when you are hurting. For me, integrity is being honest, forgiving, loving, and kind, even when it's hard to do so, even when they call you a liar, a crook, a cheat, even when they spit in your face. Thank you.
Our next presenter is Aline Reinders. Born and raised in Connecticut, Aline moved to Southern California in 2002 with her husband and two children. Assistant to the general manager at the Conejo Recreation and Park District and the soprano our choir so desperately needed. Her story is entitled Integrity. Let's get real.
Good morning.
Morning.
I will tell you about the second service. There's at least three times as many people here as at the 9:15. But the view from here, I don't know how many of you have had the opportunity to stand up here, but it's an amazing view. So 2 weeks ago, between services, I approached Reverend Nika. Having been inspired by her sermon, Living with Integrity in 2020, I excitedly told her of my intention to step outside my comfort zone more often this year. I think I may have even said, because that's where life begins. She expressed delight and encouragement, followed by this question: how would you like to speak at Sunday service in 2 weeks? Wait. That is not what I had in mind when I talked about leaving my comfort zone. Of course, my immediate internal response was a resounding no. But even as I was thinking no, I was keenly aware of the fear-based nature of my answer, centered around old patterns of behavior and thinking. After some serious reflection, I realized that if I wanted to act as a woman with integrity, my answer must be yes. Putting my intentions into action is really the purest form of integrity for me, and I had been given the perfect opportunity. So many thanks to Reverend Nika and to Darcy for putting this service together. The word integrity stems from the Latin word integer, which means whole and complete. Being whole and complete means, for me, that there is only one you. The you who is you is always you. I always feel like Dr. Seuss when I say that. So I went back to that core values handout provided by Reverend Nika two Sundays ago. If you remember, there were 57 values listed, and Reverend Nika asked us to pick five. My guess is that none of our lists are exactly the same, which I think is really fascinating. The first core value I chose was authenticity. Now, this is likely because the list was alphabetical, but in the interest of time, I thought this was the one I would share about this morning in terms of wrestling with integrating it into my life. So, authenticity, being my real self, bringing it to all my interactions. Why is this difficult? For me, that real self has been buried under a mountain of expectations, societal norms, people-pleasing, perfectionism, and last but not least, comparing myself to others, which I have often heard described as the thief of joy. This begs the following question: What am I risking if I expose the real me? Rejection? Ridicule? Abandonment? Humiliation? These are all possibilities. But what about the flip side? By relating authentically, I am likely to feel a real and true connection with another human being, to sense a resonance that vibrates deeply rather than just on the surface, to be presented with thoughts and ideas that challenge me rather than simply conform to my current thinking, to walk away from a conversation with ideas worthy of reflection. Additionally, I would like to encourage others to authentically engage with me. I can do this by asking questions that require more than a monosyllabic answer. And I can practice the art of deep listening as well, keeping interruptions to a minimum, and not letting my mind wander during a conversation. I often find myself mentally composing a response before my partner has even finished their thought. You too? Now, don't get me wrong. I realize there is a legitimate place for small talk, but even that can be authentic if we allow ourselves to engage in the process from our whole heart. Every day provides us an opportunity to suit up and to show up, to know that love freely given surely brings a full return, to live a life free of the fear of being found out, to come from a place of yes, a place of wholeheartedness and openness rather than a place of no, throwing up defenses and wearing a mask that prevents others from seeing us in our glorious humanness. The following poem by Martha Postlethwaite spoke to me in this regard. It's entitled The Clearing. Do not try to save the whole world or do something grandiose. Instead, create a clearing in the dense forest of your life and wait there patiently until the song that is your life falls into your own cupped hands and you recognize it and greet it. Only then will you know how to give yourself to this world so worthy of rescue. May the year ahead provide us all with the opportunity to discover the beauty of authenticity. And may that beauty form a foundation for a life where our dreams of living with integrity are fully realized. Thank you.
I invite you to stand now and throw up your arms in response to these courageous presenters. Shout, aho!
Aho!
Again, aho! You may be seated. Our next presenter is Merlin Snyder, singer, songwriter, architect, builder, pastor in his own right. His story is entitled My Integral Life. Merlin.
Good morning. That is, in case you didn't know, a nod to Abraham Lincoln. And I wish you all could have heard these little talks twice as I have, because there is so much in there that I appreciate, and I could even do a third time some other day. My so-called best friend Roger and I were walking home from school one day, and we came across this smaller kid and that we did not know, and Roger grabbed him and started harassing him and punching him for no good reason, just to make him cry. Seemingly out of nowhere, this large, dark-haired, enraged woman appeared. Is there anything more ferocious than a mother protecting her child?
No.
Thank you. Thank you, Tiffany. I thought she might start wailing on Roger. He started it, Roger said. Ask him. His dad's a preacher. He won't lie. And you know, he was right. Telling the truth was second nature to me. I knew from the time I could speak that I should tell the truth and not lie. It is, after all, one of the Ten Commandments. I went to great lengths to ensure technical compliance. If a teacher asked, "Did you throw that spit wad?" I would answer with astonishment, "I was sitting here." Plausible deniability without actually telling a lie. But in time, I also learned that my entire self should be true. This above all, to thine own self be true, and it must follow as the night the day. Thou canst not then be false to any man. So says William Shakespeare in Hamlet. What does it mean to be true to your own self, to be authentic? In the words of Mohandas Gandhi, happiness is when what you think, what you say, and what you do are in harmony. This is the opposite of what psychologists call cognitive dissonance, if you're familiar with the thought and perhaps the experience. It's when your poor, beleaguered mind tries its damnedest to hold two or more contradictory beliefs, ideas, or values. In the commitment to be an honest seeker and truth teller as I was raised, I came to a point where I had to abandon some of the literalistic beliefs of that same conservative Christian upbringing. It was painful initially, but in the end I was happier. It put me on a search to find what was essentially true, and I came to move beyond commandments and to make a covenant with the Spirit of life and the deep aspirations that lie beneath those commandments. I came to gain an appreciation for the greater self, the Spirit of life, which I think of as the creative power of the universe of which we are all a part. All life is one. I am part of something wonderful, and so are you. This being the case, how then should I behave? How should I treat those around me? If I could go back in time, I would not only tell the truth to that mama bear protecting her child, I would also have been the one to stop the bully instead of waiting for the mother to come and do it. I'm at a place in my life right now where the kind of work I have been doing for many years is ending and another is about to begin. I don't know what exactly it is, but I do know that I will bring to it my sense of integrity, my sense of wholeness, and my ask the question, what is it that I can bring? What gifts can I bring and let flow me through me in this Spirit of life? So I must answer again the question posed by Mary Oliver in her poem, The Summer Day. Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? I suspect living an integral life includes not only honesty, being true to yourself and finding harmony with the greater self, but in application, it also includes finding work to do or an avocation that is in harmony with who you are in your heart of hearts. Maybe it's a calling or something less grand sounding, but it is work that feels like you. It answers to and is answered by your gifts and your love. Voice still and small, deep inside all, I hear you call, singing. I will let you know what she says.
Our last presenter, Michael John Pittis, a member for 19 years, is a former architect and city planner who now pursues the art of painting. He titles his talk, A Path to Enlightenment. Michael.
You know, for 19 years, I've avoided getting on this stage. However, Darcy is very convincing. So I have no choice, so on with it. It's 1962, I was then 21 years old, and a very serious student of architecture. So much so that I would let my other studies slide, particularly when it came to writing a paper. My passion then for architecture was much the same as my passion is for painting these days. So my English and history courses suffered the most. I had a beautiful wife, her name was Sidel, who was chasing a life in the theater. She was also the very smartest person I have ever known. So when an assignment came up in English to write about a well-known book, I immediately said, Moby Dick? I know that book. What could be simpler? So I procrastinated until suddenly I realized I was in deep trouble. I had less than 2 days to reread the book and write the paper and simultaneously present my final designs to the faculty, all in the same day. You can guess what choice I made. In desperation, I turned to my very talented wife to write something that I could hand in. She did, and I didn't read it. I then submitted the paper as my own work. About a week later, my English professor summoned me. He wanted to know how I'd gotten the idea for the paper. I was puzzled. I knew the paper to be good because Sidel wrote it. He continued. What I need to do is congratulate you on coming up with a very intriguing interpretation of Moby Dick. I said, what do you mean? Well, I need to congratulate you on coming up with this thing. He said, I'm sure you are aware that writing a paper on Zen Buddhism and Moby Dick is quite unique. Congratulations. I was stunned, of course. Nothing more was said. Later, I thought degrees from Princeton and Harvard would make me a better English student. In point of fact, I barely passed most courses. Sometimes with only the aid of fellow students in exchange for help with their designs. Several years later, I was honored with an award for contributions to architecture from my first college, the Cooper Union in New York City. During the ceremonies, I spotted my old English professor. He said, you're the fellow with the Moby Dick Zen Buddhism notions. I thought, this is my opportunity to make it right. Later in the faculty lounge, I confessed I had cheated and not written the paper. He said that at the time he guessed as much. And he was about to flunk me out, but was encouraged by the design faculty to let it slide. Later, I wondered why about the integrity of the faculty. But he continued, where did the idea of combining Zen Buddhism with Moby Dick come from? I hesitated. I said, you'll have to ask my wife. But you know, I never did. After all, where did she find a relationship between Captain Ahab's self-destructive obsession and Buddha's path to enlightenment? Up to this point, if I thought about integrity at all, it was about structural integrity of the buildings I designed. Not truth or morality. I left that to Ayn Rand and the Fountainhead. So, as a young man, I was a bad speller who cheated and cut corners not to be found out. I was ashamed of my handicap, and I can't give thanks to spell check or grammar software. They, after all, hadn't been invented yet. To sum up, I've struggled with issues of integrity and principles all my life. But it was after many false starts that I gained an acute awareness of the harm of my behavior that changed my past. Indeed, I've become a decent writer, and in this awareness, I lead a more truthful and principled existence, excluding, of course, the white lies I still tell.